son, John's elder, to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in truth. Beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health just as your soul prospers. For I rejoice greatly when the brethren came and testified of the truth that is in you, just as you walk in the truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. Beloved, you do faithfully whatever you do for the brethren and for strangers who have borne witness of your love before the church. If you send them forward on their journey in a manner worthy of God, you will do well. Because they went forth for his name's sake, taking nothing from the Gentiles. We therefore ought to receive such that we may become fellow workers of the truth. As I think about Gaius, the first thing that jumps out to me from the text is that he was greatly loved. In fact, John refers to him as the beloved Gaius. And that word beloved simply means to be greatly, greatly loved. In fact, you may remember that's what was said of Daniel when an angel responded to him. And he said, "Oh, Daniel, man greatly beloved by God." That's important, and I want you to understand that this is no small thing. It is no small thing to be somebody who is beloved. It's the way God felt about him. It's the way other people felt about him. You just get the idea that Gaius was just easy to love. His life and the way he did things really matched his name. The name Gaius means happy or one who rejoices. And so I see him being that way. He's happy, he's upbeat. He's positive. He's doing everything he can to make a great difference in the church and to those around him. And so for that reason, he becomes a person who's just greatly loved. Now, I want to say something I think is very important here. I don't believe a person becomes that without intending to be that. I think a way a person becomes beloved is he wants to be beloved. He wants to be loved by God. He wants to be loved by others. And so he lives his life in such a way that that can happen. And all of us can decide to do that. We can make an effort to be lovable. I want to ask this question. Honestly, just ask yourself, is that what other people say about you? When they look at you, do they say, "I tell you, I love that man." Or, "I love that woman." Do you feel that's what people would say about you? Is that really what you strive to be? It kind of reminds me of a sign I heard about one time, true story, about a sign that was going into a certain town that was a very small town, and it said, "Welcome to," and it named the name of the town, and under that, it said, "The home of 569 happy people and one old grouch." And you know what I think I see in that is they embrace to be there for him if he needs anything at any time, no matter what time of the day of night. He's a part of this town, but admittedly, he's just one old grouch. And what I want to say to you this morning is I just don't want to be that person. I don't want to be some kind of old, obnoxious, cantankerous guy. I just don't want to do that. And I firmly believe that every person can decide to be this way. It reminds me of somebody who said to Sister Lee one time, "Well, I can't help it, Sister Lee. That's just how I am." And she said, "Well, that's long enough to be the way you am." Christ is about change, people. And all of us can make a decision. And am I going to be just an old grouch? Am I going to be the person that nobody can hardly talk to because I've always got a problem with this and a problem with that, not this problem with this person, problem with that person? Or are we going to be beloved? Beloved by God and loved by other people. Gaius was called the beloved Gaius. A second thing that really, really jumps out to me is that he made sure that his soul was healthy. Did you notice the prayer that John says that he prays for Gaius? He says in verse 2, "Beloved, I pray that you may prosper in all things and be in health just as your soul prospers." Do you realize what he just said? Can match your spiritual health. And so, what we see here is that no doubt Gaius was attending to the thing that mattered most, that his soul was healthy, and that John knew that his soul was healthy, extremely healthy, so much so that he says, I am praying that your physical health will be just as good as I know your spiritual health is. Let me ask this question. What if that was you? If God gave you, or if God gave me, the same degree of physical health as he sees my soul to have health, would that be almost a death wish? You know, you think about, here's a person over here, his soul is just not very healthy. He's not giving attention to it. He really has no focus on his soul, hardly at all. What if God said, okay, I'm going to give you the same amount of physical health as I see that you have in your soul? Would you have been even able to come this morning, or would you have been so infirm that you couldn't have even gotten here? Do you want God to bless you with the same amount of physical health as matches your soul? That's an important thing to think about. Because the truth is, if you are not giving attention to your soul, and I want to say this, a healthy body without a healthy soul is really an unhealthy person. And I want to say this, if you haven't gotten serious about it yet, if you have yet to get serious about your soul, isn't it time to? Because when you read the Bible, you will find out that nothing matters more than the soul. In Matthew the 8th chapter, verse 36 and 37, listen to what our master had to say. Matthew chapter 8, verse 36 and 37. Excuse me, Mark chapter 8. I'm sorry, I said Matthew, I meant Mark. Mark chapter 8, verse 36 and 37. It says, what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Now think about the import of that. What's it profit if you've got the whole world and lose your soul? What Jesus is saying is you have profited nothing. You have lost everything. He says in the next verse, and what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? What do you have that is of equal value to your soul? And the answer to that is absolutely nothing. And so Jesus continues to say, if you come back to Matthew 10, as he also talks about the importance of the soul here in Matthew chapter 10, he says in verse 28 of Matthew 10, do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot either fear him who has the ability to destroy both soul and body in hell. And what he's saying is, I don't have to fear a man who can destroy my body. You can't touch me any further than that. You can't touch my soul. You can take my life, but not my soul. But God says, I tell you who you need to fear. You need to fear me, the one who has the ability to destroy both soul and body in hell. Amen. What is a man profiting if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? And then I think about Luke chapter 12. In Luke chapter 12 and verse 16, Jesus talks about a man who focused on the physical. Oh, he's got everything physically, but he's woefully hurting on this other side. Luke 12, now beginning in verse 16. It says, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully, and he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, since I have no room to store all my crops? So he said, I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and all my goods, and I will say to my soul, and by the way, that's the only thing he got right. That's the only thing that really was his. All the rest of that stuff is going to be left to somebody else to fool with after he's gone. It's like the man who died and he was rich, and somebody at the visitation said, I wonder how much he left. Somebody standing by him said, all of it. Somebody once said, a baby when he comes with a clenched fist. But have you ever noticed when somebody's lying in a casket, the hands are open? It's all been released. What does a man profit if he gains the whole world and loses his soul? And God says to this man on this occasion, he says, I say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, thou fool. And that's true. It is foolish to give no thought to the thing that matters most. Thou fool, this night your soul will be required of you. You haven't got years, you don't have months, you don't have weeks, you don't even have days. This night your soul is going to be required of you. And then whose will these things be? And listen to the clincher. So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Gaius was rich toward God. Gaius was a man who gave great attention to his soul. I want you to think about your soul being healthy for a moment, and I want you to think about what's involved. First of all, in our bodies being healthy. I think the first thing that we all understand is that you've got to have nutrition. Proper nutrition is a thing that's going to help our body to be healthy. Well, the same thing is true when it comes to the Word of God. In 1 Peter chapter 2, beginning in verse 1, Peter's words here were this, 1 Peter chapter 2. Therefore, laying aside and envy and evil speaking, as newborn babes, desire the pure milk of the word that you may, if indeed you have tasted, that the Lord is gracious. God says what we ought to do is we ought to desire the sincere milk of the word. Let me tell you something, babies do. You hear a baby crying, and most of the time it's either one or two things. They either need some food or they need a diaper change, one or the other. They'll let you know about those two things. Recently, again, on the farm, we had a situation where a mom was initially rejecting her baby. And so we bring them together in the catch pen, and we even head catch the mama and force the mama to feed. And generally, after about 4 or 5 days, it'll take, and it did. But for a few days, Susan had to feed this little calf a bottle. And let me tell you, he will work it over. He will jerk and pull and bump and everything else. It's amazing to see the hunger he's got for that. You don't have to beg him to. He latches on and he wants it more than anything else. And that's what God is saying I want you to do. Desire the pure milk of the word that you may grow. Let me ask you a question. Are you hungry? Are you hungry? Is your soul hungry? Are you here today because you're hungry? Nutrition. But then digestion. To use the cow illustration, my understanding is a cow has four stomachs. And a lot of times when you see that cow out there and he's standing up, he's just ripping that grass. And he's sending it down to a compartment. But then later on he'll lay up under a tree or something like that where he feels comfortable. And if you watch real close, you can see... You'll see a little movement right here in the neck. You know what he's doing? He's bringing it back up. And then he chews on it and chews on it and chews on it. It's called chewing the cud. And when he's got all the good out of it, he sends it down finally for it to be digested. And that's really the idea of meditation. That we take God's word in massive amounts, but then we bring it back to our mind and we chew on it and think about it. And think about how am I going to make this a part of me and digest it. That's crucial. And so Paul said in 1 Timothy chapter 4. 1 Timothy chapter 4, we first of all give attention to verse 13. He says, till I come, give attention to reading, to exhortation, and to doctrine. Then in verse 15, he said, meditate on these things. Give yourself entirely to them, that your progress may be evident to all. I tell you what I'm noticing about our calf. He's getting bigger fast. Because he wants it, he takes it in, he digests it, it becomes a part of him, and there's growth. But then there's also exercise. In 1 Timothy chapter 4, Paul said it this way in verse 7. Reject profane and old wives' fables and exercise yourself rather to godliness. For bodily exercise profits a little. He's admitting on the physical side, bodily exercise profits a little. But he says godliness is profitable for all things. The weight room is only going to help me so much. But godliness will help me in every way. Godliness is profitable for all things, having the promise of the life that now is and of the life which is to come. When I exercise this stuff out, it gives me a good life now and a good life later. Nutrition, digestion, exercise, and then I think we understand there's a need to be clean. Adeline gets sick a lot, my granddaughter, but a lot of it I think is because of this. She gets those fingers in her mouth. And those fingers have been here and there and everywhere. And so cleanliness can have an effect on how healthy you are. And so God says to us, I want you to live a clean life. 2 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 1. He says, therefore, having these promises, beloved, let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God. Cleanse yourself from all filthiness. Cleanse yourself from all unholiness. And then I think we understand there's a need to rest too. I heard about a group of natives one time that were traveling, and after a while, this group of natives called coolies, they just stopped. And somebody asked them why they stopped, and they said that we are waiting for our soul to catch up with our bodies. Does your soul ever outrun your body? Or your body outrun your soul? Sometimes we're just so busy and we're just doing one thing after another and we get discouraged, and a lot of it's because the soul can't keep up. And so sometimes we just need to rest. One of my favorite passages is Mark chapter 6, where Jesus said to his disciples, after they had gone and done all kinds of things on the limited commission, they wanted to tell Jesus about this person that was healed and this demon that was cast out, and Jesus just stopped them and said, come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and rest a while. I've often said I like to unpack that verse. Come aside. By yourselves. To a deserted place and rest a while. These are the things that will make you healthy in your body. And these are the same things that will make you healthy in your soul. I want to ask you this question right now. Right now. 11:07. Right now. Is your soul engaged? Because sometimes I look out and I see somebody sleeping. And I think to myself, what are you doing? The soul is not engaged. And sometimes I see situations where it just seems like a person's just kind of checking off a box. You know, you're supposed to come to a certain degree, or the elders will talk to you. Or, you know, you're supposed to come a little bit and because heaven is kind of important. And it's like it's just checking off a box. Is your soul engaged? Right now. One place I used to preach, I've told you about it. There was a guy that used to, when anybody was preaching, he was wanting to take notes. He wanted to get every bit of that down. But the problem was that time just kind of kept getting in his way, and so he finally just do that. And you'd look out there, and that tie'd be over his shoulder. He'd be taking those notes. It looked a little funny, but I'll tell you what it told me. He's hungry. That soul is engaged. Gaius made sure his soul was healthy. Do you? Do I? And then let me add this. He walked in the truth. And John said, I rejoice because of the truth that is in you, Gaius, and how you're walking in the truth. And I have no greater joy than to know and to hear that my children are walking in the truth. Give you a few passages here that you're well familiar with. This all begins with, first of all, giving your life to Jesus. You can't walk in the truth without knowing the one who is the truth. In John 14 and verse 6, Philip wanted to know, how can we know the way? And Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. Walking in truth begins by giving your life to the one who is the truth. And let me just ask you, dear friend, have you done that? Have you given your life to Jesus? After you do that, God wants you to take the Bible inside of you. John 17:17 says, sanctify them by thy truth. Thy word is truth. This is the truth. And God wants us to take so much of this in us. Here's the way I like to say it. It needs to be that if somebody cuts you, you'd bleed Bibbling. You'd bleed Bibbling. Bible. There's so much Bible circulating through the spiritual veins of our soul that if we were cut, we'd bleed Bible. That's what it means to walk in truth. And as Henderson read to us, do it. Do it. Don't be like the man who hears the word and then becomes a forgetful hearer. The text said, blessed is the one who goes to the word like he goes to a mirror and he looks and beholds himself. But then he goes away and immediately forgets what kind of man he was. What God is saying is not only do I want you to take it in, I want you to examine your life. I want you to meditate, see what changes you need to make. And make them. Don't be just a hearer, but be a doer of the word. Because folks, let me tell you, that's where transformation happens. The whole point is to become like Jesus. And the way we become like Jesus is by doing the things I need to do and by not doing the things that I don't need to do. And that's where transformation begins to occur. And as Paul said to Timothy, give yourself to this that your progress may be evident. There have been times in congregations where I have seen a guy, and I didn't realize it. But he's like that old Chinese bamboo tree. I had a friend one time that I told the story about the Chinese bamboo tree. And he said, when you told that story, I said to myself, oh, Jeff's done told one now. The Chinese bamboo tree. The first few years, you don't see anything. Then I think in the fifth year it grows to a height of about 75 feet all in 1 year. And the reason it grows to such an enormous amount in 1 year is because it had been putting down roots before that. And this friend of mine said, I thought you'd sure told one for sure until one day I went out behind my house, and it may be because the drain spout was right there. He said, well, there was a dandelion that was reaching all the way up at the top of my roof, up to the eave of the house. He said, well, I guess it can happen. I guess it can happen. And I've seen guys in congregations that you don't think they're doing anything. And then all of a sudden, whoa, here they come. And you realize what they've been doing is they've been putting down a root structure for years. And now here comes the fruition of it, that your progress may be evident to all. That's what I want to see. I want to see all of you, me, come forth with tremendous growth. This is where transformation happens. Because the truth is, the greatest advertisement for Christianity is what it does for you. If your neighbor does not see that it has done anything for you, then why is he going to want it for him? The greatest advertisement for Christianity is what it does for you. In Gaius' case, you might just say his walk matched his talk. He didn't say one thing and do another. He talked it. He walked it. And I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. And then this. He was faithful in being hospitable. In Gaius' day, men would travel preaching. And as they traveled, they depended on Christians to help them and take care of them in the various places that we went. And what John indicates to Gaius is that you are faithful what you do for the brethren. Gaius was helping these brethren Every opportunity that he had, when somebody came along traveling through, he would show hospitality to them and do whatever was needed to take care of them. And when it was time for them to move on, it says that he would send them away with help. And that's really what we need to do. Don't just send somebody away, but send them away with something. Do something for them as you send them on your journey. So he would welcome them, show support, and then send them away showing his support. And in this way, he becomes a contrast to another man in this book in verse 9 who is stuck on himself and who has to be the big cheese. Verse 9 says, I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence among them, does not receive us. You see, this man, he loves to have the preeminence. Mark my word. If you ever have a guy or woman in a congregation that causes trouble, 9 times out of 10, it's a search for significance. They want to be somebody. They want the attention somehow drawn to them. Mark my word. I wrote to Diotrephes, but he loves to have the preeminence among them. And he does not receive us. Therefore, if I come, I will call to mind his deeds, which he does, prating against us with malicious words. And not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren. And he forbids those who wish to, putting them out of the church. He wouldn't let brethren receive these other brethren traveling through. And he says, do not imitate what is evil, but what is good. He who does good is of God, and he who does evil has not seen God. Gaius was hospitable, and he said, do this in a manner worthy of God. I'm just going to tell you, folks, we are never more like God than when we sacrifice to serve other people. I want every one of us to be so strong on hospitality. A couple of weeks ago, I did a sermon called Having a Lydia House. And there were a few people who came to me afterward and said, I'm going to do better. I think all of us maybe decided that we're going to do better. We want our homes to be an extension for the gospel. We don't want our homes to be museums. We want our homes to be tools that we use to bless other people. And Lydia, after becoming a Christian, after she first gives the Lord her life, it said she then said to Paul and his travel companions, come to my house and stay. And it says she constrained us. She wouldn't take no for an answer. But this is a little bit different. This is people traveling through that are Christians, but you don't know them personally. That's going to happen here at Danville Road. We're going to have some people sometime traveling through, and they're going to stop here. And you know they're Christians, but you don't really know them. They're a stranger to you. He said here of Gaius that he was one who did faithfully whatever he did for brethren and for strangers. We need to be hospitable to them. Can I encourage you to put a little money aside? Just put a little money aside, because you know a day is coming when somebody's going to be here at the building and they're going to be traveling through. And you can go over to them and say, are you folks in a hurry on your travels, or could we go do lunch together? Take them out to lunch. Or do some kind of gesture that really shows that you appreciate them and you're sending them on their way in a manner that is worthy of God. I've had some great experiences like that. I went to one place one time. I was preaching there. And in the middle of my sermon, I look up and there's two people from my home congregation that are sitting in the building. They had come all the way to Chattanooga just to support my preaching. That meant a lot to me. But afterwards, somebody took us out to eat and invited Monica and Robbie to come. And while there, they found out it was Monica's birthday. And without her realizing it, they'd already gotten word to the people that we got a birthday girl. And all the people come, you know, like they do, and they started singing, happy birthday. And here's these people she's never met, looking at her and looking at the smile on her face, happy birthday, dear Monica. Oh, and she felt Christianity.
I went to one person's place one time, went to visit there at a congregation, and a lady said, come to my house. She said, I didn't got anything prepared, but we'll do something. And we went there, and she opened her cabinet, and there was the spaghetti sauce. She didn't have any meat. Didn't matter. She just did the spaghetti sauce, and she had some spaghetti noodles, and she did that, and she had a little bread, and we ate and had the best time. Wasn't fancy, but it filled her stomach. It was good. And I felt the love of brotherhood. A great blessing comes when we entertain strangers. Hebrews 13, verse 1 and 2, I think Abraham is being referred to. You remember Abraham received three men into his house? He didn't realize it until later, but one of them was the Lord and two of them were angels. And Hebrews 13 and verse 2 says, do not forget to entertain strangers. Don't forget to entertain strangers, for by so doing, some have unwittingly entertained angels. I don't know if that verse is saying that there might be angels that come into our midst and we don't know it, and we invite them home with us, and without knowing it, we're entertaining an angel. I admit the possibility that could still be something that happens. But I do think I can say this. When we don't entertain strangers, we might miss out on a great blessing. Because some entertained angels. God said he could count on Gaius to be hospitable. My final point this morning is that Gaius was faithful in being a team player. Gaius knew that by helping the preaching brethren who were passing through, that he was being a team player. Verse 8 says, we therefore ought to receive such that you may become fellow workers for the truth. I heard a podcast the other day, and I hadn't ever thought about this, but it's obvious that God wants you to be a team player. Have you ever thought about it? Life's all about teams. When you go to work tomorrow, isn't it going to be a team for most of you working together? When you come home to your house, isn't it going to be a team? When you come to this building, isn't it going to be a team? How can you ever be successful if you're not a team player? If you're not working for the benefit of the team. And I want to say as I get close to finishing this lesson that I applaud people who don't have to have their way, but rather can be team players. You know, in Romans the 12th chapter in verse 18, it talks about a Christian being a person who is willing to yield. Being willing to yield. I've got the wrong verse, but I'm... Well, I won't keep looking, but it's in Romans 12. It talks about being willing to yield. Heard about a congregation one time where they had an old oak tree out in the lot. It had been there for years and years and years, giant oak tree, but I think maybe it was starting to cause some difficulty. And so the brethren met and they talked about cutting down the oak tree. And there was a man there that said, brethren, don't cut down the oak tree. It's been there since I was a little boy. I played as a little boy out in this parking lot. Don't cut down the oak tree. But nevertheless, they decided to cut down the oak tree. Come Saturday morning, they're there, and everybody's got their chainsaws. He was the first person there, had his chainsaw out, and he was greasing it up and putting oil in it, getting gas in it. And somebody says, I thought you were opposed to cutting down the tree. He said, I was, and I still am. But we decided to cut down the oak tree. And when we decide to do something, you can count on me to show up and do my part. That's a team player who doesn't have to have his way. The brethren decided that we will cut down the tree. And he's there to do his part. I went to a congregation a while back that they're going to be moving to a new location. They're out in the boonies where they're at. But they found a place right there on the main highway of one of the bigger cities that's a hub for everything around those mountains. And I applaud them because they're not converted to brick and mortar.
Sometimes you'll propose something like that, and people say, "No, sir. I grew up in this church. My mom and daddy were in this church. My grandmother grew up in this church, and I'm not moving." You do it if you want to, but I won't be with you. What are you converted to? Are you kingdom-centered? The best thing they could do is go to that location and reach into the hollows and the hills from there. Some of the members are going to have to travel 10 minutes to get there now. They didn't care. We are in a position to do this. We believe it's going to be best for the kingdom. Let's do it. And I'll tell you something else that I think about a lot, and I encourage it a lot. Especially in my home county, you have two churches 5 miles apart, and both of them are struggling. Why don't you come together? Why don't you have this church and this church to come together? Demonstrate a wonderful unity in doing that, and now do together what two churches couldn't do separately. But you know there's people who will oppose that. No, sir, I'm not moving. Why? Because this is where I've always gone. Okay, so are you about you? Or are you about the kingdom? Are you a team player? Or are you going to be a Diotrephes that has to have his way? Some people won't yield. But somehow I get the idea that Gaius would be a team player. No wonder he said, "The greatly beloved Gaius." He's got a healthy soul. He walks in truth. He's hospitable. And he is indeed a team player. If you're here and you need to respond to the gospel today, would you take care of your soul today? What if you die today? What if you die today? Is it well with your soul? Make sure of it. Come while we stand.
It has been